What's up, everybody? Welcome to the State of Wild, episode 48. My name's Meowth, and as usual, I'm joined by my two co-hosts and good friends, Raffle and Corbett. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I've been enjoying a few days of new cards and having some fun with that when I'm able to dodge Warlocks with my greed.
Yeah, I'm freezing, dude. It's cold here. It's middle of winter. I'm not having a good time. I'm wrapped in a blanket. You guys can't see it on the video feed. But yeah, apart from that, not too bad.
Not too bad.
It was 110 this week here. So
that's
we are in...
It better not be Celsius.
No. No, I would be on fire if that were the case. Yeah. That's Fahrenheit. But we are apparently opposites right now.
I mean, I'm down here in the south, but I have 80 degrees. 80-85, but I have like the 100% humidity. So like I walk out to the mailbox and I'm like drenched in sweat, even though it's not, like,
oh, thank you
hot.
So much for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, man, you're missing that image because it's the winter over there, right?
Your first mistake was going outside. So
I mean, I had to go to the mailbox today because I was getting some magic cards shipped to me for a new deck, so I had to go outside. I was forced to. But enough about all of that. Enough about our personal lives. We're here for Hearthstone, so let's start talking about some Hearthstone. But before we get into all that, we gotta do our housekeeping. So first of all, just a reminder that the podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. If you do want to listen on the go, you guys can check us out there. And make sure you guys, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening to us via podcast, just a reminder to hit that subscribe button. It's a small thing, but it does actually support us a ton. We've also launched a brand new podcast community Discords. So if you want to hang out with a bunch of people that listen to the State of the Wild podcast, or just want to hang out and ask us questions, we're pretty active in there. Make sure you guys join that Discord. The link to that will be down in the description below. And of course, there's one last way to support us, and that's via our newly launched Patreon, patreon.com/stateofwild. And so thank you to all of you guys that have checked us out. This is not necessary, but we do appreciate those of you that are going above and beyond to support us. We would like to go ahead and shout out our brand new legendary and epic, you know, patrons this week. So I'm going to take a little bit of time to shout you guys out. Birdie, Mono, Number Theory, Otters, Science Daddy, James, Nando, Romanu, Serana, and Simon. Thank you so much, guys, for supporting the podcast. It's, you know, it really does mean a lot that you guys enjoy the show. But yeah, I think that's it for our housekeeping. All right. So yeah, new mini set came out. We got 35 brand new cards. And with it came this huge wrecking ball to the Wild metagame, based around Stealer of Souls. So this week we're going to talk about some of the cards, but there's this one card in particular that has been, you know, the talk of Reddit and Twitter and YouTube videos alike. Stealer of Souls, 4 mana, 2/6 Warlock Demon. Whenever you draw a card, it costs health to cast instead of mana. And so if you guys haven't seen this combo deck before, the idea is to tutor the Stealer of Souls, get it as fast as possible, and combo it with Plot Twist. So basically, you play Stealer of Souls, you play Plot Twist, you have a brand new hand of cards that cost health instead of mana, and then you play something like Mal'Ganis or Violet Illusionist to make your hero immune. And once you've done that, you've assembled Exodia, and you have literally infinite mana to play as many cards as you possibly can, as long as the rope allows you to, right? So it's got a variety of win cons. You might have seen some Mechathune decks. You might have seen some Togwaggle decks. You might have seen some Darkest Hour decks, right, that just play a bunch of stats, Lothebs and Unravelers that make you kind of unable to answer the board. You've got a variety of win cons, but yeah, it plays very similar in play style to, I think, Tiller Warlock, back when Dark Moon Races originally came out, where it's this really fast combo deck on turn 5, turn 6, that preys on all the slow decks in the format, but it is pretty susceptible to things like aggro, right? You do need to have life to play that Mal'Ganis, to play that Violet Illusionist. That 2/6 needs to survive, right? So if you play Pressure Play or Explosive Runes, it'll die. But yeah, what are y'all's initial thoughts about this deck? Because I know everybody is talking about it. Give me the thoughts and feels, the initial impressions about this deck. And I'm going to let Corbett start off here, because before the show started, he already hit me with the, I have scalding hot takes, even though it's the middle of winter in Australia. He's got these scalding hot takes. Corbett, let us hear it.
This deck sucks. Like, this deck sucks. I don't care how many different ways you try and build it. That is my take. This deck is trash. So I've seen obviously all the versions that you're talking about, whether it's like the Mechathune, the Alex combo stuff. And I think that every version, there's nothing that stood out to me as particularly impressive. I think that the deck is so weak and just terrible into aggro that it really is just like pathetically strong. Like if I was doing my own tier list thing, I would have it borderline tier 4 right now, like maybe a little higher than that, but sure. That said, you know, maybe there's a build out there that's strong. Like there's a lot of issues with this, right? Like maybe there's a build out there that's strong that we haven't seen yet. It's been like 3 days, right? So it is possible, but I personally don't see a build path because I don't really know how you make the deck not weak into aggro and not weak into losing to its own draws enough. Because you can't play Voidcaller Voidlord, really. I mean, shit, maybe you can. Like, maybe you try and play Voidcaller, like, no matter what, just because you need it to not die. But it's really hard to build this in a way that lets you actually not be weak to aggro, not be weak to disruption and stuff like that. And so I really have not been impressed. That said, I think the combo could be a future concern. Like, it can definitely be a problem in the future. And I'm not going to blame anyone if they want it nerfed. Because, yeah, it is unfun. Yeah, it does, like, fundamentally break the game on a very literal sense. Not broken in terms of power level, but there is something fundamentally kind of wrong with what sort of happens with this interaction and with this deck. And so if you want it nerfed, I'm not going to blame you for that. But I think that that's one conversation. And then the other conversation is, it's tier 0, it's tier 1, it's broken, it needs to be nerfed ASAP, emergency. And that's the part that I definitely disagree with. Because to me, even if it does beat up some of the slower stuff, there's a lot of other decks that do that. You know, Mizaki and, you know, APM Mage and, you know, even old Mechathune decks. And now there's this new one, and I think it's really bad. I think the reason it's seeing such a high play rate is because a lot of the mini set didn't give us a ton of options in Wild, and it's kind of just exploded because it's very flashy, and it's very new, and it's things like that. But given, you know, a little bit of time, I think it would go away by itself. But we'll see whether they actually decide to step in and things like that. So that's my little rant and things like that on, you know, Stealer of Souls Warlock decks, I suppose.
I thought you were coming at us with some hot takes, and that was, like, the take that I've, like, been thinking about, and I think a lot of people have been thinking about, at least in the community. I don't know, Rolfo just shook his head. Do you have a differing opinion?
No, I don't have a different opinion. I have a different observation. I think that what Corb said is important, that there needs to be a bit of a separation between what the problem with the deck is, and otherwise we're just going to have this conversation every time something similar comes up in the past. The deck is very beatable. I've encountered all of the different versions myself. I've never actually seen the Darkest Hour big minion type go off because I've just killed it, like, if I've been playing any type of reasonable deck. So that's the one I'm maybe most concerned about, just because of the Unravelers kind of make removal a little bit awkward, on top of the fact that they put the Scrapyard Colossus down for essentially free and can kind of tank up behind that. And in particular, if they're using Mal'Ganis for their immunity, like, that could create some potential problems, and we've seen how that type of deck has actually performed reasonably well in the past with the true Darkest Hour. So I don't think that the animations are limiting factors. It was, you know, a bit of a surprise initially for me. I think that the draw order is the one thing that really is hindering the deck. Animations, like, even in the Mechathune version, I just took out Valdris and put in Hemet, solved all the problems. It also solved some of my draw order problems, but still, it was pretty inconsistent. That said, as soon as somebody was playing something reasonable, or as soon as I started playing something reasonable that, like, actually hits my opponent in the face and plays cards in the first 3 to 4 turns, you know, it seemed incredibly beatable. And, you know, it's not just getting their life total down below a certain threshold, which obviously is the goal. But even if you fail at that and they expend some of their removal, they plot twist fewer cards and are less likely to be able to actually finish the game on the turn that they go in. So, like, aggression isn't just about the life total. It's about, you know, limiting their resources for the combo turn. So the deck's not good. I agree that it probably could and should be nerfed just because of the way that it plays. I don't think that that's, like, an intended or healthy play style. But I'm also with you in the fact that, I think that the community needs to be very clear about the problem that they have with the deck, because, like, there's a lot of inconsistent and incorrect information, even not with just this deck, but even dating back to Tiller. People come into my chat and regularly speak under the impression that like the Tiller OTK was a tier zero deck and was like unbeatable. And like, it's fine. Like I understand it, but it's kind of like the same thing happened with Shudderwalk when it was first released in Standard. Yeah. Like the repetitive and like visceral reaction to what's happening to you distorts the actual strength of the deck in a way that you can't actually communicate properly what the problem is with the deck. And I think that it sucks to lose to it. Yeah, I don't like losing to it. I wanted to play something greedy early on, and I just, you know, was kind of conceding to Warlocks pretty quickly because I didn't want to watch the animations. But I recognize that, like, that is my choice. I don't like it anymore, but that is my choice to play a deck that doesn't really have a chance to beat it when the population is mostly Warlocks. Like, there are a lot of decks that beat it. And in particular, one of the most popular decks in the format once people, like, revert back to trying to climb and playing good decks, because Secret Mage is just going to farm this. And, like, as long as Secret Mage is here, it's going to be another APM Mage where it needs, like, a 55-60% win rate against the rest of the field in order to make up for its loss of, percentages to Secret Mage.
Yeah, I think people have very visceral reactions when something, like, they have very established ideas of what Hearthstone is and what the rules of the game are and what the mechanics are. And when something goes beyond those mechanics and rules, that's when they kind of freak out, like, the hardest, you know, whether it is Shadowwalk going infinite or whether it is this type of deck or Tiller, because those decks kind of physically break the game in ways that are very obvious and feel weird and gross, and that's kind of, like, why you want it switched. A couple of things, though, but I think, like, APM Mage is obviously the comparison. I think this is worse than APM Mage. Like, I really think it's actually worse than that deck. So, there are similarities between them and the type of deck they are and the turn that they pop off and the play experience a lot of the time. I do think it's worse, and so I think it would kind of fade away a little bit by itself, more so than what APM Mage did.
I think one of the problems I personally have with it is the same issue that I had with Darkest Hour Warlock, where it feels like it most of the time just loses to itself, and I don't like playing against that deck, and I don't like playing against that deck either. It's just like, I don't know. I like, people meme on a lot of broken decks as being Coin Flip Simulator, but that's literally what Darkest Hour was, and I don't really think that that's how card game... It takes away agency essentially from both players when that happens.
Yeah, I feel like we were just having this kind of conversation, though, like you mentioned, like 3 weeks ago with APMH, and then before that, like 3 weeks before that with Tiller, where I completely agree with what you guys are saying. I do want to also point out that, like, I think this is 100% getting nerfed. I think it's very similar to the Tiller situation that we saw with Darkmoon Races, where, like, I highly doubt Blizzard didn't see this coming as, like, a very obvious synergy with plot twist. I think, like they said with Tiller, okay, they see it, but they don't know if it's going to break the game or be obscenely powerful. And so it's one of those, put it in the game and see what it is, right? And then kind of check it later, like they did with Tiller and Hysteria. I don't know if you guys necessarily agree with that, but, like, I don't have an issue with Stealer of Souls working the way that it does. I don't have an issue with the card itself. I think it's a very, very cool card. Like, in Standard, it has some pretty, like, cool interactions because it doesn't have plot twist, right? But I do expect us to see a nerf here, though, just because of the community outcry, because it kind of breaks the fundamental principles of the game. I do also want to put it out there, like, is losing to this on turn 5, turn 6 that much different than losing to something like Mizaki Mage or Celestial Alignment Druid? I would wager that, like, losing to Mizaki Mage, to me, feels way worse than losing to this deck because of the double block and double, like, Frost Nova.
How is it, like, I have this conversation with my chat all the time, like, is it really that much different than a nut draw against Cute Warlock or, Aggro Druid or even Kingsbane Rogue? Like, the decks can have nut draws. I think it's just, like, I don't know, the outcome of the game shouldn't be solely predicated on that, whether or not you hit your cards in the right order necessarily. So I know there's an inherent part of card games that involve that, but, like, that shouldn't be the entirety of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen a lot of the comparison, though, to Darkest Hour. And it is, like, the obvious comparison, right? Largely because they're both Warlock decks. Like, I think it's very easy to make that pairing. But the thing is, like, it's very different because Darkest Hour could actually play, like, things like Voidcaller, Voidlord. Like, Darkest Hour was actually very, very strong. Right? Yeah, it was actually very, very strong at its peak. Like, it was a tier 1 deck, funnily enough. Because, you know, the thing with Darkest Hour is why we're always concerned is because it was a coin flip deck. The thing is, the coin flips were like 47-53, and then it's like, hey, if this ever gets a little bit stronger, then it's not actually going to have a counter, and that's eventually what happened until it was nerfed. There was like an expansion there once it got Dark Skies and things like that. So yeah, that deck was definitely similar, I think, in terms of the, I drill these cards and the game ends, but it was also something that was always going to be more popular, I think, long term, because it was actually good, whereas this deck... Again, I really do think that the only reason it's seeing this influx is because this mini set just didn't give Wild very much. Like, it just happens. It's the first expansion adventure, whereas the last adventure was in the third expansion of the cycle. And so, as a first expansion adventure, it's probably just lower power level, right? It's a lower power level set, and Wild just didn't happen to get many things to try. We got a bit, but not a ton. And this is flashy. It's new. People are flooding towards it. And, you know, if... The thing is, like, people say, I don't care how strong it is. It doesn't matter how strong it is. Don't you get it? It's the interaction. And I understand. But you should actually care how strong it is, because people drop decks that are terrible. Decks that are terrible don't see play. And if deck doesn't see play, then it doesn't matter. Like, Necrom Apothecary is very similar to this. It doesn't see play, like Deathwing Necrom Apothecary, right? Because it's bad. And so if this deck is bad and people drop it, then it's not really inherently that much of an issue at all.
I want to counter that, though, because at higher ranks, yes, that's true, but you have to realize there's a lot of people that aren't at higher ranks. Like, Big Priest was a tier 4 deck. It was garbage before we got Bloody Gahoon and Palm Reading, right? It was absolutely abysmal, yet it was always one of the top 3 played decks whenever we did a VS report, because people loved that deck, right? And
Big Priest did drop.
It dropped very, very minimally, though, right? And it didn't stop the reaction people were having when they queued into a Big Priest. Even though the deck was bad, it felt really bad to lose to. And this deck, like, it feels bad to lose to because it does, like, super unfair, breaks the fundamentals of the game sort of thing. And so, like, at higher ranks, yes, I'm already seeing people dropping the deck at, like, top 200 Legend because the deck sucks. But I think what you're seeing is a lot of the people that are on Reddit and Twitter, they're not at top 200 Legend, right? That's just not physically possible because there's only 200, right? And so they're going to keep playing against this deck, and people are going to love playing this deck because it's, you know, the Big Priest, the Darkest Hours. Sometimes you have the nut roll, and people love that. And so, yes, the deck sucks, but I think it also does warrant a nerf because it is extremely abysmal to, like, It, like you guys have mentioned before, like, it does do kind of, you know, dumb things, right? It doesn't follow the rules of the game. Like, we were talking about this yesterday, Corbett, where, like, it doesn't make sense that, like, if you have 4 health, even if you're immune, why can you, like, play a Scrapyard Colossus, or why can you play the mecha thing? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I thought that interaction changed. I was saying previously, before the card was actually released, I thought that's how it worked, that if you didn't have enough health, like, if you had less than 10 health, you couldn't actually play the Mechathun, even if you're immune. I don't know if whether it was a brawl that did that, or whether it was an interaction that actually changed, or if maybe I'm just remembering wrong, maybe I'm just wrong. But that's how I thought it worked.
I mean, intuitively, I feel like that makes more sense, that you would need the life total to actually pay, even if you're not taking the damage, right? Because, like, going immune should just prevent the damage, but if you don't have the
requirement, like the check,
you don't have the required funds, you can't you can't pay, even if, like, you're getting a full discount. So I think that that would I don't know whether or not that was ever the case. I don't remember that specific interaction. Intuitively, it makes sense, and, like, that would maybe probably solve some of the issues with the deck. I'm not as confident or convinced as you that the deck is, like, as bad as you're saying. I think I don't think it's a top tier deck by any means, but I don't know that it's straight trash. That could be a consequence, as your rank 5 expert, that could be a consequence of the decks that I'm playing and the ranks that I'm playing at. it certainly seems beatable, but like with a fairly narrow subset of decks that just kind of happen to already be the best decks in the format anyway, though. So it's like, you know, I don't think it's top tier, but I think that, you know, it's pushing just about any Reno deck out right now. Mm-hmm. I haven't queued into a single Reno deck since the expansion, I don't think.
All right, so I think we're all kind of on board about the deck, right? We all have similar ideas about the deck. It's not as powerful as people are making it out to be. I think we're all on board that it's likely to get nerfed, / we want it nerfed. I haven't specifically asked you that, but I'm assuming we're all kind of on that same train based upon our discussion. So I want to pose this question. How do you think that they could nerf this card without kind of, you know, no pun intended, without ruining the soul of this card for Standard, right? Because in Standard, it's got, like, it's not doing anything in Standard, right? Like, people are finally doing, like, Coin Soul Stealer on 3 and then backfiring on 4, and they're getting their first taste of what Darklit Warlock could be in Standard, but it still sucks over there, right? Is there a way for them to nerf this card without ruining the card in Standard? And I'm going to bring up a couple, since I'm posing the question. There's a couple ideas. Like, the most obvious is the first card you draw each turn cost health instead of mana, right? That would ruin the backfire shenanigans or anything like that, but...
That would essentially ruin the card, and, like, you couldn't even play it on 6 with a tap. Like, it would just be a pointless card. It would have to stick for a turn. So, mm-hmm. like, it would be even less playable in Standard. So, yes, that would be a simple fix for Wild, but, like, just makes
it would ruin the card. Yeah,
it's just not a card at that point, like, okay. Because you would have to stick it for a turn, which like, you don't want to play a minion that has to stick for a turn.
Yeah. All right, second potential nerf, this one's a little bit more elegant. I've seen this from a couple of people, and essentially changing the mechanic of immune. And so essentially, when you play Violet Illusionist and you play Mal'Ganis, you can play cards that cost health, but you don't lose any life. And so basically reworking how that mechanic works so that if you can't pay the life, you can't play the card, right? And because you're immune, you can't pay the life. And so therefore, you can play Sealer of Souls and Plot Twist, but then the moment you drop the Mal'Ganis, you can no longer cast any of the more of the cards in your hand. It's really kind of complicated, and it doesn't make a lot of sense, but that kills the deck in Wild without ruining the soul of the card in Standard.
I think that there's, like, that seems unintuitive to me. I think that what Corb was describing earlier is in a similar vein, but probably makes more sense from just, like, consistency intuitive point of view, where rather than not being able to play the card because you're immune, you can only play the card if you have, you know, more than enough life total to pay for it. So, like, effectively... change the way that paying health for cards qualifies basically as like taking damage rather than paying life. So like if you don't have the like we said earlier, if you don't have the life to give, you can't pay the cost. I think that there's some middle ground there that just because I don't know that completely changes. I guess both are changing a fundamental Hearthstone interaction as it stands now, but the one we discussed earlier seems more intuitive to me.
Yeah, I agree, but I also think it doesn't actually do anything.
I was about to say, it doesn't really nerf the deck.
Yeah, I don't think it's enough. Like, I know it does slow it down a little bit, like you might not be able to do some things, but you can still do things like Drain Soul, Armor Vendor to get, like, your health total back up, and then you can still do, like, the Mechathun combo. And so I think while it would slow it down, a lot of the scenarios where it would are kind of a little bit narrow, and it doesn't really stop the combo from going off against slower decks like Reno decks, for example, because they put on no life pressure, and so you kind of just always have enough life total a lot of the time. I don't think as much as that makes sense, it doesn't actually solve anything. So I don't know what the right move is, because I don't like the first proposed suggestion because of, you know, how you outlined it does kill the card, and I don't think the second interaction change or like rule change makes any sense. And so I think it's very tough to find something that makes sense that doesn't actually kill the card outright. Maybe you can... It's really hard to go off the Plot Twist as well. That's a very hard card to nerf in any way without, like, just increasing the
nerfing,
mana cost,
nerfing Plot Twist nerfs, like, the Quest Warlocks that play...
Yeah.
And the bet... Like, I don't think you can nerf the plot twist without ruining a bunch of other decks. And so, I don't know, it's really, really hard. So, because it's really, really hard, I also brought up something else on my stream that I want to post to you guys. Do you think it's ever worth or feasible to do something like a ban list like they have in Magic, where it's going to be really, really hard for them to keep printing really unique, innovative cards in Standard without eventually breaking things like they have done in Wild? And so do you ever think it's worth doing something like, okay, we're printing Sealer of Souls for Standard, but it's going to create this really toxic OTK deck potentially in Wild, so we're going to preemptively ban Sealer of Souls in Wild, right? Yeah, like, you just won't be able to play the card. And they do that. Yeah, they do this in duels.
Yeah,
they do this in duels, right? Where you couldn't play, Self-Sharpening Sword in duels. So there's that possibility. I don't know if they'll do that. Or they could do what they've done for Classic, where you just kind of have different versions of the cards in different formats, which I think is even less likely for them to do, especially for Wild. But it's a possible solution. It's a little bit out there. But do you think they would ever do something like a ban list like they do in Magic?
I think it's becoming increasingly necessary to do so. There's no feasible way to, as much as people want them to balance new cards while printing something interesting around, you know, almost a decade now of sets within Hearthstone. Like, it's just, it's not a realistic expectation. So whether preemptively or reactively, I'm fine with having cards pulled out of the format. It's there's precedent there with Magic, and maybe it's just my background in that game that's biasing me a little bit, but I don't think it's, you know, necessarily unhealthy. And I think that as power level increases, cards can come out of the ban list if they're no longer, you know, relatively as powerful as they were in the past, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that is a much better solution than having multiple copies of the same card just for different formats, just because that creates confusion. There are people that are still confused about the Leroy in Wild and thinking that he's 4 mana now. Like, that legitimately creates confusion, and I think that that's something that's worth considering, especially since, you know, there is a fairly large portion of the Wild player base that is a little bit more casual and just wants to come back and play a few games with Big Priest or whatever. So I don't think that that's good. Obviously, the ban list is maybe a little bit difficult on that type of player as well, but at the same time, like, you can make it very apparent that a card is banned in your collection if you're building a Wild deck. They do this, like you said, they do the same thing for duels. So I don't know. I've been saying, I think since Barnes was like a hot topic, that like it would probably be in Wild's best interest to have a ban list just to remove problematic cards from the format, because, like, again, it's not a realistic task to, first of all, see all of these interactions potentially coming as you know, a team as big of the size that the Hearthstone team is, like, within a Wild format, when that's not their priority for developing new cards. And then to, like, properly, like, they, again, in order to print interesting cards, they have to take risks on things that would potentially break the format. And I think a reactive approach is just kind of fine for that. I don't know. I would be for it.
Yeah, first, I mean, I think this is a really interesting idea, and obviously, you know, it would have been really cool if there was some way to ask a dev about this kind of thing, hypothetically, so...
I was going
to
bring this up once you were done. I was like, what? We missed Ixar by a week, dude. Come on.
Second, I think there is a little bit of risk on Blizzard's side if they do a ban list for this thing, because it kind of opens up the floodgates a little bit. Where, you know, they don't really want to change that much about in terms of, like, nerfing cards for Wild, and I think banning opens up similar issues for them, where if they start doing bans, all of a sudden they try to meet demands about all these other bans, and they kind of seem to not want to touch it too much. But this is probably better for them in terms of, like, their view of the format, because it means that they can just unban it when it rotates, or they can change it and unban it when it rotates. I don't know. I'm kind of into the idea. I don't know how feasible it is and likely to happen, but it could be interesting.
Yeah, my expectation wouldn't be that they go back and, you know, set a ban list with cards from previous expansions, because that kind of removes some of the nostalgia of the expansion. It's more in a situation like this where a card is released intending to do interesting things in Standard, breaks things horribly in Wild. Like, I don't want Plot Twist to be changed. I think that would be, like, again, I was pretty upset when Aviana was nerfed as a result of Juicy Psychmelon being printed. So, like, I don't want them to change old cards as a result of new cards, I guess is my concern. But I also don't want new cards to come in and kind of, you know, break fundamental aspects of the game and the format, even though, you know, to a degree, that's what an eternal format is about. But I think that there's a line that is potentially getting crossed.
Yeah. I mean, out of the three options that we have, like, proposed about the Stealer of Souls, like, the ban makes the most sense to me, but it's also, like, the least likely to happen. And I'm just worried that we're going to have...
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's the most extreme of the options.
Yeah, it's all. Definitely the most extreme, but, like, I mean, imagine, like, being a Standard player, and you remember how mad that they were when Dark Glare got nerfed because of Wild, right? Would this Dark Glare Zoo in Standard actually be a thing if it was 3-mana refresh 2? Maybe. But because of Wild, they don't even get the chance, right? Like, that whole archetype has been floundering for about a year now because of Wild having Dark Glare nerfed. And so what if Dark Glare was just nerfed in Wild at that time and Standard got to play with its interesting toys? When it eventually rotates, you can unban, see what it does, and then, you know, put it back on the ban list if you need to. And I don't feel like there's very much harm, because in Magic, there's this whole, like, monetary aspect of banning cards because they hold value. In Hearthstone, you don't have that. And so...
So the one downside, though, is that in a format that's already kind of seen as being in the backseat, or, like, mm-hmm. being a second-class format, you're getting one less card introduced to that format. So that sucks. And I don't know how to solve that, but I guess the question is, does that suck more than, you know, the feeling that you get losing to the Stealer of Souls Warlock? So that's not a question I personally can answer. I have an answer to that. I can't answer that for the entire community.
Yeah, fair. Okay, so we've been talking about Stealer of Souls for about 30 minutes now, so I think we're going to move on to some of the other 34 cards that were revealed. But before we do, I have one last question for you guys. What is your name for this deck? Soul Lock, Stealer Lock, Blood Lock. I hate this deck, Warlock. What are you guys calling it?
I think it. I just call it by whatever its win condition is. I'm still calling the Vomit Big Minions Darkest Hour, and I just call the Megathune version Megathune, and then I don't know.
Ruffle your lane. Only... No new names. No.
I know.
No unique names.
It's the same deck. Like, it has a different means of getting there. Somebody you know, was asking me early on that there's, like, because I was playing it day one, obviously, for the content, and somebody was asking, well, mentioning how, oh god, this is broken now, but it's going to be refined more, and I was like, well, hold on, we kind of already know how to build Megathune Warlock. We just need to add in the pieces for the combo. So it's essentially the same deck. Darkest Hour, that version is kind of around the same lines, just with some new cards thrown in as well. So that's my rationale for it. I don't know what to call the Alexstrasza version. I've only lost to that once, and it was like, sure, you got me.
Yeah, I've been just calling it Plot Lock because I like saying the words Plot Lock. It sounds nice. Mm. So
I was given the name Bloodlock because, like, loss of life and, like, the little blood symbol instead of the mana, which I thought was pretty unique. I don't know. I just think that if the community's going to start crying for this deck to be nerfed, we need to be unified in what we're calling the deck. So
okay, well, hold
we
on.
Got
but,
the important issues.
But the last time we let that happen, people came up with the AK-47 Druid, and, like...
That was a terrible mistake.
Maybe,
well, I mean, well, we got Cute Lock, which was a good decision, but that was a bad decision, yeah.
Because you were able to get out in front of that one, I think. So, like, you were a big reason why that one was... you know, named as it was. So maybe you're right. Maybe we just need to get out in front of it. And I like Plot Lock. That does kind of roll off the tongue, but Blood Lock's pretty good too. I like the thematics of that.
So let us know down in the comments below what you guys want to call this deck, because we all got to decide on one if we're going to cry to the devs to get it nerfed. All right.
That's a good way to get a lot of bad words in our comment section. I don't know if you really want that.
But we'll at least get comments, and that's all that matters, right? For that interaction
is engagement.
Exactly. All right, so we've talked about Stealer of Souls for about 30 minutes, but we had 34 other cards that got released. Believe it or not, I know you might not have seen the other 34 cards, but there were 34 more that got released. So let's just talk about some of the highlights. We're not going to do a card review for all 34 of these, but let's just talk about some of the highlights. I want to start with Primal Dungeoneer, because I saw this card, and this is like the meme with the guy with the tape smacking the thing that, like, you just slap the shit on everything. Like, every shaman deck that can run Primal Dungeoneer, you want Primal Dungeoneer, because it's such a good card. For those of you guys that don't know what this is, it's a 3-mana 2/3. Draw a spell. If it's a nature spell, draw an elemental from your deck. So what you can do is you can just have this as a 3-mana 2/3, draw two cards, because in shaman, 90% of the spells that you want to be running are nature spells anyways, so it's just nice. And you can use this to draw any elemental from your deck, but depending on the deck that you're playing, let's say you're playing Reno Shaman, you can use it to tutor specific elementals, right? So you Zephyrus and Grumble, right? But if you're playing a more aggressive mid-rangey build, you can just use it to draw a card, or specifically draw Cage Match Custodian so that you can draw your very important weapon in whatever deck that you're playing. But yeah, Primal Engineer, this card is absolutely busted. I love this card. I'm assuming you guys are in the same boat.
Yeah, I haven't yet tried out the aggro shaman that's running it, but like, that list looks sweet, and I imagine that drawing two cards while making a body in that deck is pretty bonkers. So that's probably going to be the next shaman deck that I try. I played it a little bit in Jade Shaman after a conversation during last week's podcast, and it just felt good. Like, just playing that on curve in a deck that's fairly limited in terms of like the 3-mana plays, it felt incredibly strong. I was running the quest and then doubling it up, just, oh man, felt amazing. Four cards for off of one just feels incredible. Obviously that's a little bit greedy for the way things are going right now, but like, the card is great. I think the Dungeoneers in general seem interesting, but this one just is like head and shoulders above the others.
Yeah, I mean, this is just one of those like staples, like, ever, like, you just played in everything, so it's kind of the equivalent of, like, I don't know, like a Barov, right? We're like, here in Wild we now have this tool for all these shaman decks, and it's fine. It's now just like Meow said, it's duct tape for every single shaman deck of the format, except Even Shaman and Big Shaman, and maybe I'm forgetting something, but apart from those, yeah. Busted card, love it, one of my favorites in a long time. Very simple, but yeah, really cool.
Yeah, I absolutely love this card. I might just craft some of these golden, because like, I'm running it in everything, you know? Just, it's beautiful.
It is almost single-handedly turned around the shaman class in standard. Obviously, things are a little different in Wild, but like, the fact that it had that, like, there's some other cards that obviously got introduced that we'll talk about another one here in a moment, but like, this card is the primary reason why that shot up happened, and so that tells you a lot about the quality of the card. It's kind of like a Draconid operative type situation where, oh god, this class sucks. Here, have this.
All right, let's talk about some of these other tools. Let's talk about Wailing Vapor. So this is just a 1-mana 1/3 elemental. All right, just a 1-mana 1/3, but it has some pretty insane text on it. Every time you play an elemental, gain +1 attack. It's a mana elemental, or elemental worm. Yeah, let's go with that one. Yeah. It's just an insane one drop for any sort of aggressive shaman deck, in both standard and wild. I know Corbett and I have both been playing a ton of the aggro shaman, aggro elemental shaman. We both built it a little bit differently, but basically you're abusing Wailing Vapor because it's an absolutely absurd turn one play when you're running self-like Cage Match Custodians in your deck already. Wailing Vapor, insanely good.
Yeah, scaling one drops have consistently been some of the best cards in the history of Hearthstone, so it's like, this is another one. It's kind of a dangerous inclusion for the standard format, I imagine, but like, for that reason, but it's so conditional that I think it'll probably be fine. Just like, they can just pump the brakes on elementals for the next couple expansions.
Don't do that. No.
So I think that, like, it's, I mean, we've seen it with Mana Worm, Tunnel Trog, Undertaker. Like, some of the best cards do what this card does.
Before we move on from Wailing Vapor, I do want to point out, I did get beat by Kronos a couple of times. Shout outs to Kronos, who is playing like this package of Kindling Elemental with Wailing Vapor and Arid Stormer and Sandstorm Elemental. It's just like this super anti-aggressive kind of shell of elementals. And like, he's running, I believe they're running it in Shudderwalk Shaman. But like, I think you can just run that. Any sort of mid-rangey build of Shaman could just be like running this package of cards alongside the package of like Ice Fishing, Toxin, Flurgle. And you're just kind of like absolutely insane against a lot of like board-based aggressive decks. So just something to keep an eye on kind of moving forward with Shaman. But yeah, these two tools themselves kind of push Shaman a ton in our format, definitely in Standard. And because, I mean, we should just go ahead and talk about this third Shaman card that got revealed, because I also think it's pretty good. So I have been playing Sereno Shaman recently. Don't ask me why. I'm a little bit sad that I've, you know, was convinced into bringing Reno Shaman for some tournament lineups, but Perpetual Flame performed insanely well in that deck against aggro decks. So stuff like Kingsbane Rogue and Pirate Warrior and Odd Paladin, they kind of do the big vomit and then don't have refill for like a turn or two. Then you just like answer it with a Perpetual Flame. You don't really care that you took the turn off afterwards because you're not taking 12 damage. And so Perpetual Flame, if you're one of the people that are playing Reno Shaman for God knows what reason, I think Perpetual Flame should just be something that you're running in your deck because the card is really, really, really good.
Seemed like one that people were sleeping on just because of the potential for the overload to get out of control. But like you said, I think if you're having the overload become a problem, then you're solving a more pressing problem, I think. So like, I haven't tried it yet, but I could see some potential in it.
I kind of like the idea of it in a frog package with Bloom and Lava Shock, because the Lava Shock can get rid of the Perpetual Flame and the Lightning Bloom on the same turn. So if you just run like Lava Shock is your only two cost spell, you run whatever you want in the one cost with Perpetual Flame, and then you have Bloom, that could be like a nice shell moving forward. It's a really good like turn four clear. But yeah, apart from that, I haven't really given it too much of a go because, you know, slow card. Like, maybe good in slow archetypes, but, you know, slow archetypes haven't been something that I've been trying too much right now.
Do you think Perpetual Flame, each time it's cast, does it draw you a card off of the Spirit of the Frog?
No, I don't. Aww. No, it won't. But, you know, it's still fine.
Damn. Yeah. I mean, it's still good. All right. So we've talked about a lot of Shaman cards. Shaman got some really, really good stuff this mini set. Big fan of a lot of the cards that they got. So let's talk about another card, Lady Anacondra. Or Lady Anaconda, whatever you want to call it. So this is the Legendary Druid minion that got released. A 6-mana 3/7 Legendary minion. Your nature spells cost 2 less. So we talked a lot about this last week, but kind of just slots greatly in Celestial Alignment Druids. I know Krabet said that he wasn't super excited about this card because Celestial Alignment kind of just wins anyways, but I don't know. I've very consistently been like OTKing people the turn after, where like I wasn't always doing that. And by OTKing, I mean Togwaggle, because I think that's the version you want to go with Lady Anaconda, because Overflow is a nature spell where UI is not. But yeah, I don't know. She's good. That deck is really unfun to play against, but it's really fun to play. I think we've heard this before with a lot of decks in our format right now. Being on the receiving end of Celestial Alignment Druid is not very fun, but having Lady Anaconda in that deck, just like, it's very APM Mage-esque, where like you play Celestial Alignment and then the turn after you like you hit the go button and you have 75 seconds to play your entire deck and like 10 cards from your opponent's deck and just hope your opponent can't answer. But yeah, she's really, really good. I don't know if you guys have had the chance to play with her yet.
I have, and I've also had a chance to play against her. I think that she's about where I put her in terms of like what she adds to the deck, if maybe a little bit better, but only I think in the Togwaggle version. I think that she's like, I think she's actively a hindrance to Malygos Druid. I had a Malygos Druid Celestial play the Anaconda and then just run out of steam, because even after they played the Nourish, they couldn't reset their mana crystal. So in that situation, the card would have been better as either Omu or Kun. And so because it was Lady Anaconda instead, like, I don't think you want all three of them. I think that's too many, and you also potentially run into board space issues. So I don't think she changes Malygos Druid, but I was playing not a Togwaggle version, but like a version heavy on draw. I was trying to set up what Corb talked about with a bunch of Solar Eclipse into Cenarion Wards into like Lotheb to stick a board. and the deck's bad. No, I wouldn't recommend doing that. but I was amazed at how easy it was to just draw all of my cards, empty my deck, and I was just like, oh yeah, this is just the nuts for Tog, because then you could do, instead of being an idiot like me and throwing up a bunch of armor and making a bunch of Abyssal Enforcers that can't attack the opponent in the face, you could just like Solar Eclipse and Naturalize for free twice against your opponent with an empty deck after you play the Tog. So like it just gives you an obscene amount of burst in Togwaggle Druid, like very kind of similar to the Auctioneer versions, but faster and a little bit more efficient in terms of pulling off the combo turn, because you're not paying any mana for any of the key cards in the deck. So I was impressed by how simple it was and how effective it was at emptying the deck. Something that I slept on was after the alignment, nature studies into things like Branching Paths, Ferocious Howl to like effectively turn them into nature spells by reducing their cost with the nature study. So that interaction alone kind of makes it so that you can still run good spells in the deck that aren't necessarily nature spells.
So the next card that we want to talk about is this really kind of not flashy zero mana spell in Hunter called Serpent Bloom. It's zero mana, give a friendly beast poison. Corbett, I know you've been having a lot of fun with this. I've played some of this Hunter deck as well. What do you think about the power level of Serpent Bloom in our format? Kind of ignoring the dream combo of Dread Scale plus Serpent Bloom, infinite Flurgle, right? Every turn, killing the entire board. Just in like a general power level sense, how do you feel about this card?
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's one of those cards that is just better in Wild than Standard. And the main reason is because in Standard, you can't really afford to run something so valueless, really. Like, in Wild, we have Starving Buzzard, right? And Starving Buzzard works so well with this, where you have like much less dependency on, you know, actual value, because you're just drawing your entire deck. And it works really well with all those like Spring Paws and things like that. And even Kolka Packrunner, if you're on a non-Master's Call version. So yeah, I think this card's great. I think it really just highlights how much I actually wanted Zero Mana Hunter's Mark when they didn't give it to me. Because they're very similar cards, like, functionally. But yeah, no, it's really, really cool. It's it definitely makes things like Glare matchup feel so much more bearable, where previously you kind of just had to like pray that they went wide and then you like unleashed them. And Unleash isn't a very good card. Like, you don't actually want to be playing Unleash. But now that you have an actual like really clean response, it kind of also reminds me of like Toxfin in Murloc decks. It just gives like these aggro beast decks sort of a little bit more flexibility in how they can respond to the opponent's board. And yeah, just a really cool card. Very happy, very simple. As like a hard removal for Hunter, this feels very on point. I really like this one.
Yeah, I've been playing the Packrunner version of the deck, and I've been liking it so much more than the Master's Call. Maybe just it's because it has new cards, and so it has, you know, a little bit more.
Packrunner's so fun. Like, Packrunner's amazing. Packrunner's one of my favorite cards, like, ever.
Packrunner with all these zero mana spells and coin and adorable infestation alongside of a buzzard is just like the dream. And I'm actually not even running Mancrink on that list. I think you were running Mancrink. I just like cut him for double kill command so I could go face, because I mean, that's probably because of the soul, or what do we call it? Plot lock? Was that we decided on?
Plot lock, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Blood lock? Running around. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know. I've been having a lot of fun. Dude, yeah, I just equated it to Zero Mana Hunter's Mark is what it was, basically, for that deck, which is, you know, a great card. But yeah, so let's move on to, you know, Hunter's better, bigger brother, I guess, Demon Hunter. Let's talk about some tools that Illidan got. Illidan got Fel Rattler. This is a 3-mana, 3/2 rush beast with the death rattle, deal 1 damage to all enemy minions. And then I'm going to talk about this in combination with Devouring Ectoplasm. So this is a card that we talked about last week. 3-mana, 3/2, death rattle, summon a random adventurer. So one of those 2/2s with random keywords. I have been playing this in an odd death rattle demon hunter build. And like, it's so much better than running stuff like the 5-mana 1/1s and Fugin Install Egg and a bunch of bad death rattles. But also, these aren't like great death rattles. So like, I think it makes that mid-rangey odd death rattle demon hunter better, but I don't think it makes it like something you want to be running over the one drop heavy death rattle build. I don't know if any of you guys have played against it or played it yourselves. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I played the death rattle version of Odd Demon Hunter just today, actually. And yeah, again, it felt good. Because Odd Demon Hunter is a good deck, but the thing that Odd Demon Hunter does well is, take advantage of its hero power and hit the opponent in the face. Mm-hmm. And so, like, some of the death rattle things that it's doing kind of take away from that. So I agree that it's just, like, it's a worse version of the deck. But it's still a, reasonably strong deck just by the merit of, like, its hero power. Odd and even decks can always carry worse cards than your typical deck simply because they're so reliant on that hero power that, like, you can just sneak in, bad stuff, and the deck will still perform well. But my experience has been that the Ectoplasm feels a lot better than the Fel Rattler.
In Wild, at least, right now in the meta.
In Wild, at least. Mm-hmm. And that's in large part because I was like, with the hero power, you're just getting ahead on board. So, like, it doesn't seem that necessary to rush in and, break the death rattle. I can see that changing if maybe Odd Paladin becomes more popular, or even Cute Lock becomes more of a thing. But, like, it just hasn't felt like the Fel Rattler has been paying off too much. But, like, the adventures I've been impressed with, and just the fact that you have a more consistent summon that with this with the Ectoplasm than you do with something like Piloted Shredder, where the variance was pretty wild. Like, you have a much more narrow range, which it makes it a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, we were talking about this as like a 3-minute Piloted Shredder, right? Last week when we were talking about it, and it feels very much like a 3-minute Piloted Shredder. Like, it feels really good. In both Standard and Wild, it's felt like a very playable card. All right, speaking of adventures, I do want to touch on Meeting Stone a little bit. I kind of just brushed over this when I initially saw this. Also, we totally haven't talked about this, but in addition to the 35 cards, we also had two more nerfs to Paladin, by the way. We completely forgot to touch about that. First day of school went from 1 mana, add 3 cards to your hand, to 1 mana, add 2 cards to your hand. Kind of the nerf that they should have done originally, in my opinion. But I'm glad that they took the risk with the attempted rework. And then Hand of a Doll going from +2/+2 to +2/+1. And the reason I'm bringing those up now, not totally, because of Meeting Stone, is I want to cut First Day of School now from Hand Buff Paladin. Just because I don't know if it's good enough, and I was just experimenting with some cards to run over it. And so I ran into somebody playing Meeting Stone. I tried it myself, and it actually feels really solid. If you play this on one, it's a Hand of a Doll target, right? Even though Hand of a Doll is a little bit worse, it's still, like, insanely good when you go one drop into Hand of a Doll. And then the 2/2 adventures it spits out actually have really, like, the keywords are pretty powerful when you combine them with buffs and Broomstick, right? Lifesteal, Taunt, Divine Shield, Poison, like, they're kind of insane in Hand Buff Paladin. And so I've been trying it out in First Day of in place of First Day of School. Not sure which one's better, but I just wanted to bring this up here because I think Meeting Stone has felt really, really, really good. And so just something to not sleep on, I think, in that deck. Hand Buff Paladin, poor Bodybuilder, man. Like, this deck has gotten hit like 5 different times now.
He had a good run. He had a good run, Meowth. Like, come on.
We saw the latest VS report. It can be toned down a bit. As soon as we brought up Meeting Stone and then initially shifted to the discussion about the nerfs, like, a light bulb went off for me where I was like, oh god, Hand Buff Paladin. Because, like, it makes a lot of sense. You've tried it more than me. I haven't encountered it yet, but I see two scenarios. The opponent wastes damage trading into it, and you still get, something off of it in most
situations.
You still
get one, right? You're guaranteed one eventually.
So it replaces itself. Mm-hmm. Not ideal, but, like, it heals it, the opponent wastes an attack. The other option is that, you set up a Righteous Protector in front of it and protect it for a few turns. You get a value engine rolling. And then the third option is that, like, you buff it to a point where it can't actually be removed, and it's a relevant threat itself while generating additional resources. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think we talked last time about First Day of School, where the minion quality initially doesn't really matter because you're adding a bunch of stats to him anyway. The same thing applies to Meeting Stone, so I could see that being a good substitute.
Worth a shot. Haven't tried it myself. My guess would be that it's probably actually not good enough for the deck, but I definitely think it's like worth trying. Like, I'm not gonna throw this away because I definitely understand like why this could be good. Once you make it buffed, right, and it's not like a freebie off the board and actually has attack power, then it's much better. And again, like you're saying, it snowballs, and if they can't remove it within basically one turn, if they can't remove it the turn that it's played, then it becomes like very, very, very good. Mm-hmm. But I still think it's probably not good enough if I had to guess. But
let's tie it back into the nurse. Would you still be running First Day of School in Hand Buff Paladin at one mana, add 2 minions to your hand? Do you still think it's good
enough? I think I would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I actually would, which is crazy, right? Like, it's actually insane that I would still probably play it. But I think it's still worth it with, you know, it's just one mana to get 2 cards in hand, and it still works really well with, like, Broomstick and things like that. So I think for now, I would probably still think First Day is good enough. But, you know, haven't tried it, haven't played it, so just a guess.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about our last card that we want to highlight from the mini set. We couldn't go throughout this entire episode without talking about Mutanis. The 7-mana Murloc. I tried to play some Shudderwalk Shaman with this card, and it was abysmal, and I hated myself because I went like 0-10 with it. It was so bad. I never actually got to cast Mutanis. I think I cast it once. I think I cast it once, and that was it. I don't know, dude. The card feels really... I haven't tried it in Odd Warrior, which is like where I predicted would be like the one place that it might actually see play. But yeah, dude, Mutanis. I don't know. I mean, Ruffle, as the rank 5 expert, I'm assuming you have played a bunch with Mutanis.
Absolutely.
Is it better? Is it better at rank 5, or is it still just garbage?
Well, let's just put it this way. Not only have I played it, but I have hero powered it with the double battle cry, and this is my first game, mind you, ate a conditioned Nazoth. And so, like, when you can do that kind of thing, oh my god. The card's bad. It's not disruption. Or it's not relevant disruption because you're dead the turn that it comes out. I think where it potentially excels is, and where I found it to be viable and useful, is basically as a way of, like, countering hand advantage in a Reno deck. So you... it's really only relevant in a Reno Mirror, potentially. And even then, it's not to like disrupt their combo pieces. It's just to like get card advantage against them. So it's basically a discard card.
It's basically better Ticketus then, right? Because it's not a demon. So you can run the Void Caller, Void Lord, Willow stuff, and then you can use this to generate advantage.
Well, it's not a demon, and its cards in hand are significantly better than cards in deck because you can't play the cards from your deck unless you're, you know, doing something specific. So cards in hand matter, cards in deck don't. And so, like, in that way, it's relevant. I was also a little bit surprised occasionally how relevant the body it made did become, mm-hmm. because if you're, like, actually eating something, it's something that the opponent's holding, so there's a good chance it'll be quite large. So I see it as a way, if we ever get back to a situation where things like Reno Warlock and LPG Mage are relevant again, it might be worth a slot in those decks just if you're running the second Nazoth just to you know, mess with their shenanigans. Something that I was hitting a lot was the Dragon Queen Alexstrasza when I was queuing into, I guess this was like, I think I said earlier I didn't queue into Reno decks, but that was the past couple days. Day one, I think I did hit a few, and I hit a Dragon Queen Alexstrasza, I hit things like that where like pulling those resources from the opponent's hand was pretty good. It's not a combo disruptor though, because you're dead. That's been my experience with it. I haven't tried it with Nazoth. I don't feel like a 4/4 is that much different than like getting a Nightmare Amalgam or something as your Murloc. So. It's a bad card, but it's a lot of fun. The animation's sweet, and like, living the dream of hero powering it is, I don't know. I can retire as a Hearthstone player happy now because I love discarding cards from my opponent's hand. So I like the card. It's just it costs too much mana.
All right, so let's move into our decks of the week. So we're not going to feature any of the Serpent of Souls decks. We're going to feature some new stuff that you can enjoy and play on your climbs to maybe take advantage of those people that are still playing the Stealer of Souls decks. We're going to go run through these really, really quickly because I know we're getting pretty late in the episode. The first thing that we want to show you guys is a couple of different Shaman decks because I know we were talking up this Primal Dungeoneer a ton, right? We were talking about how great it was. I want to give you guys a couple of examples. These are my versions of the decks. So the first one is an Elemental Aggro Shaman. I know Corbett talked about like how good Kindling Elemental was, and I like didn't take his word for it because I'm dumb. And then I played with Kindling Elemental, and I was like, holy crap, this is just a free 1/2 that activates all my elementals, and it gets buffed by Storm's Wrath, and it hits face. It's just good. All right, I'm sorry, Corbett. I'm sorry for doubting.
But... Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's okay.
But yeah, I mean, this deck is just, it hits face. It's Aggro Shaman with card draw, which is so nice. All the spells that you're running in here are nature spells. You're guaranteed to hit 2 off of the Primal Dungeoneer. But yeah, pretty straightforward. For those of you guys that are listening on the podcast, I'll read it out really quickly. Everything in this deck is 2 of, super clean. You've got Lightning Blooms, Kindling Elementals, Lightning Bolts, Nava Zappers, Storm's Wrath, Surging Tempest, Tunnel Trogs, Wailing Vapors, Cage Match Custodian, Crackle, Lick'em, Totem Golems, Arid Stormer, Primal Dungeoneer, and a Serpent Shrine Portal. But yeah, I know, Corbett, you've been playing a little bit of Aggro Shaman yourself. I know your list is a little bit different than mine, but how have you been enjoying the deck? And do you think that there's, like, sticking power? Like, it's strong enough, to be a player long-term once, you know, Stealer of Souls eventually gets nerfed?
Probably like not like too good, but it's an excellent building block for the deck, right? Like it's one of those things where we now have this insane early game with the Vapor and the Kindling Elemental package, and that's very impressive, especially in other aggro matchups. Like this deck can just beat other decks of the board very, very easily. And so I think like right now it's not super amazing, but it's fun. Like I had a really good time playing it. It was really enjoyable to play Shaman again. I like all the elementals. I love elemental cards in general. I had a good time with like the Arid Stormer as well. Arid Stormer working with Storm's Wrath and things like that. Kind of was punching the opponent in the face for a bunch. I also had the Wacker Knoll over the Lick'em, which I think is very just your personal preference. Like I see them very similarly. But yeah, super fun deck so far, the whole elemental aggro shaman stuff. Very impressed by, again, Kindling. Kindling is so broken, dude. Kindling is insane. And now it has Wailing Salt, or Wailing Vapor, as its little buddy.
Yeah, I haven't played this particular list with some of the new cards, but I have done something similar with Kindling and the Whack-A-Knoll. And there, oh my god, there's nothing more satisfying than Kindling on 1, Arid Stormer on 2, and then potentially buffing that Arid Stormer. Especially if the opponent like develops a tour guide, or not a tour guide, like a lowly squire or battle friend or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just a 1/2 minion, you're just like, well, that's GG, sorry. Like the Arid Stormer,
unlucky.
Arid Stormer on 2 in a board-based mirror is just GG.
It's Crab Rider on steroids, right? That's what that is. But yeah, and it's also a great budget deck, by the way. I didn't realize this until I'm looking at it right now. It's 1300 dust, no legendaries. Speaking of, I have tried a little bit of a slower version of the deck with Thunderheads and Vecinas, just to kind of see how it plays. I like the Ag version a little bit better just because it's faster. And being fast is good when you have Reno in the format, when you have combo decks in the format. I've killed people on turn 3 with this deck. It's with combination with Lightning Blooms and Tunnel Trogs and Wailing Vapors, you can do some pretty obscene like things with this deck. It's a lot of fun to play. The other Shaman deck that I want to talk you guys through is my version of Evolve Shaman. So this was inspired by Thompson, who was hitting top 25 Legend on NA with this deck, with a version of this deck, and I kind of took it in a little bit of a different direction, kind of mixing my experience with the deck in Standard to this. And I mean, it's a very similar kind of argument to what we were just talking about, where Primal Dungeoneer is only hitting nature spells, right? It's hitting your 4 evolve cards and it's hitting double bloom to help you do the evolve thing faster. I'm running double Cult Neophytes alongside the Lotheb just to slow down the Mizaki Mages and the Rena Priest and the Stealer of Souls, slow them down so that I can combo. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with this deck. It was actually pretty successful as well. Man, if they ever make Mogu Flesh Shaper, like, 7 mana,
yeah,
and they give us, like, 4 attack Bogspine Knuckles back, like, this deck, I'm scared of it being a real thing because the high rolls are going to be absolutely disgusting, but if you give me back 7 mana Flesh Shaper and you give me back 4 attack Knuckles, this deck is going to be scary good. It's already, like, playable now, and if you just, like, give it back its toys, it's going to be insane. I just realized that I didn't run through the deck real quick, so I'll read that out real quick. Again, everything in here that's not a legendary is a 2 of. Double Bloom, double Mutate, double Broomstick, double Evolve, double Kindling. Basically in there to make Electra cheaper so that you can do some absurd pop-off turns. Double Cage Match Custodian, double Cult Neophytes, double Desert Hair, Electra, double Dungeoneer, double Serenite, double Knuckles, double Doppel. Say that 5 times fast. Lotheb, double Creeper, and double Flesh Shaper. Again, pretty straightforward deck. If you don't have Electra, you feel free to cut Electra, and of course Lotheb, and the Neophytes are tech cards. I was running Pirates there for a little bit. Like the was it Bloodsail Corsair with patches? It's just like one drop Pirates. I would like that a lot more once we got back like the ability to do Dread Corsair with Knuckles. I think you definitely shift back towards the Pirates. If we ever get that back. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you enjoy fun shenanigans, that's what this deck does.
I've been playing a bit of it, the Evolved Shaman. A little bit of a different list. Like, I was still using the Pirates, less spell tech and things like that. I always really like to play Evolved Shaman in Wild because it's very off-meta and, you know, you can scam wins. And it's always fun, the Evolve package, when you randomly come across cards that you forget exist. Like, I love that part so much when all of a sudden an Anomalous popped onto my board and I was like, oh, that's a Hearthstone card. Like, I remember that now. So yeah, really fun to play the Evolved Shaman. And like you said, this is one of the things we should have in mind as we look forward to, you know, next Rebirth season, you know, like several months down the road. But, you know, if we get back Knuckles and we get back, well, just Knuckles by itself could actually kind of push this, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Half my time playing Evolve Shaman is me, like, realizing how bad I'm low rolling because I didn't realize, like, half the minions that I got existed. Like, do you know how many 4-mana 1/1s and 1/2s there are in the format? Like, I didn't realize that until I keep going Desert Hair Evolve and my board doesn't change from the 1/1s that I summoned. And so,
no, I just always hit Vargoth. It's Vargoth every time off the Evolve.
Good play.
Yeah, you just thank you. Need to get good. Yeah. My personal favorite, like high variance outcome is Bolf Ramshield because nobody ever knows how to properly interact with that minion and they just trade into it and it's great. Maybe it's, again, a consequence of the ranks that I'm playing at, but it's a favorite of mine.
PSA, hit face, okay, to kill the Bolf.
The next deck is an Anacondra Togwaggle Druid deck. We talked about this a little bit, and this is where you can really power through your draws as a result of zero-cost overflows, which is incredible. So there's 2 Lightning Blooms, 2 Bio Projects, a Sphere of Sapience, double Wrath, which is a nature spell and free off of Anacondra, Ferocious Howl, 2 of a Vargoth, double Branching Paths, a single Injured Marauder, double Oaken Summons, double Overgrowth, a Twig of the World Tree, Forest Warden Omu, because you still do want to get back some of those mana crystals, even with the Lady Anacondra, who is our next card, double Nourish, double Spreading Plague, Azalina Soul Thief, double Celestial Alignment, double Overflow, and King Togwaggle. So, essentially, it just looks to swap the deck, not necessarily a burst combo in this version of it, but you know, you do kind of still have the Azalina as a you know, follow up if the opponent does play the King's Ransom. So more traditional type Togwaggle deck that just looks to swap decks, leave the opponent helpless and effectively out of resources. Again, the real benefit to Anacondra in this is that you're already running such a dense package of nature spells that the hard part of Togwaggle used to be emptying your deck. She just makes it really quite simple. And on top of that, it's like one of the fears of Togwaggle in the past is that you still just get bashed in the face on the follow-up. But zero mana Spreading Plague helps you contest some of that if you you know, if you have the board space to do so the opponent can't just, like, pump through damage after the fact.
All right, last one coming up. We have the Hunter deck using that Serpent Bloom. All right, so running it through, we have 2 Serpent Blooms, 2 Penguins, 2 Alley Cats, 2 Spring Paws, 2 Timberwolves, 2 Wolpertingers, 2 Cracklings, 2 Don't Feed the Animals, 2 Scavenging Hyenas, 2 Starving Buzzards, 2 Desert Spears, a Dread Scale, Dust Bait potentially, 2 Master Skulls, a Rinling's Rifle, 2 Tundra Rhino, and 2 Corridor Creeper. So very similar to like the mid-range Beast Hunter that we were playing before the expansion. Or before the mini set, I suppose. But now we have that Bloom Dread combo. I think that Dread combo is really fun, but if you don't want to craft it, don't feel any pressure to. Like, it's a very fun interaction, but I don't actually think it's necessarily the best version of the deck. Just play like an adorable infestation. Totally fine. But yeah, we talked about Bloom earlier. I really do love these Hunter decks. I love these Buzzard decks in general. And I think this is absolutely, like I was saying earlier about the Dungeoneer and Shaman, Buzzard's really just like cool centerpiece of wild Hunter decks moving forward, and it feels nice to have this back, and it's nice to be able to play Hunter a little bit. You know, we haven't really played it much since the expansion released after it had that 1 week window with the reverts, and I had a lot of fun with it with Serpent Bloom coming back this time.
Yeah, I was playing a different version of the deck that did run Pack Runner, but overall pretty similar. I like the I don't know, there's something about Buzzard and then playing not only minions, but especially minions with Rush that just feels very active and, I don't know, just it's satisfying. And, like, I got a few of the Dread Scale high rolls with the Serpent Bloom, and, you know, it carried me. I even had a few people rage quit, like, on turn 3 when I did hit that. So you know, it's nice when it happens, but, like, some of the times the card Serpent Bloom felt best was you know, when it was just a zero mana Hunter's Mark, and especially if you are running the Pack Runner version, it's a completely free card too. So like, you're not only removing something for free, you're also drawing something, and with a Starving Buzzard on the board. So it just, oh man, some of the interactions with that deck just are so satisfying. And then like, there's something equally satisfying to sticking a Desert Spear into a Starving Buzzard and getting free cards with the adorable infestation as well. I had a lot of fun with it.
Dude, you guys are all about this like Starving Buzzard. Like, I'm all about the 20 attack Scavenging Hyenas. Like, that's the part of the deck that I'm like the most excited about. Like, God, it's never not satisfying to smack somebody with a 20 attack Hyena, like through 3 taunts, right? You just like rush all your little 1/1s in, and then all of a sudden there's like a 25 attack Hyena hitting them in the face. And
I don't know what
like,
I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
But mine literally always got removed before they could attack. I don't know what I would set up this huge board, and then either my board would just get obliterated before I could like trade them off and get Hyena value, or I would just get burned by like master or targeted removal.
In the words of Raffle from literally 5 minutes ago, Raffle, you just got to get good, dude. Come on.
I guess so.
All right, so those are some 4 decks that are not Stealer of Souls. If you guys want to change a pace, you can find the deck codes to these decks down in the description below. Just click the little show more button, and of course you can find all of us, you know, streaming some new decks. I know we're all trying different decks at least, and of course like on our YouTube channels and our Twitch channels and all that kind of good stuff, so make sure you guys check us out there. But that will wrap up today's episode a little bit longer, but we had a lot to cover. We had a brand new mini set to talk about, as well as a brand new broken deck to complain about for 30 minutes. So I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Raffle and Corbett, thank you again for joining me. Let the people know where they can find you.
Sure, I am at RaffleHS on Twitter and Instagram, and Raffle on Twitch and YouTube.
And guys, you can find me at Corbett Games on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. So thank you very much for listening and watching.
Yeah, and you guys can find me at KeepMeOuth on Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube as well. And of course, thank you again for all of you guys that are watching all the way to the end. We really do appreciate you guys. And again, shout outs to our patron supporters. Thank you so much again for going out of your way to support the show. We hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We hope you guys are, you know, staying with it, enjoying the wild meta, even with the Stealer of Souls combo Warlock. Hopefully by the time we record next week, we'll be talking about how quick of an action Blizzard took, potentially. We'll see. I have my fingers crossed, at least. I don't know if I am too optimistic here, but we hope you guys enjoy, and we will see you guys again next week. Later.